comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. And that's the truth. Hey, if you're not subscribed to our K-Files, why not? It's our free weekly newsletter, absolutely free, no strings attached. And you can subscribe right now on our website. Just click the link that says K-Files, and then you will no longer have to be seated in the peanut gallery with the mushrooms. You will be in the know. President Obama called the astronauts on the space station, and during the call, he told them that he is deeply committed to space exploration. Of what? As the U.S. is apparently going out of the manned space exploration business, India is rushing full speed ahead into manned space exploration, and they have a manned mission to Mars planned by 2030. So I am glad that at least if America is not going to lead the way, I'm glad someone's picking up the ball. Special information for new members. We have a bunch of folks that have been joining, new members. And when you log in, the first page after you log in is what we call the members area launch page. And there are several links on that page. I urge you to read the new members info. Take the time to read it. And you will notice also a link that says help. That help file is entirely designed for the members area. And so most of your questions about, you know, you think, well, this isn't working or that's not working. Yes, it is. It's all working. And there's something that you're just missing. It's in the help file and in the new members information file. So those are there to help you out. Okay. You may remember several shows that I have done fairly recently about this information that's out there on the internet about the Gulf of Aden or the Gulf of Aden. What's on the internet is that there is some kind of a stargate that has opened up on January the 5th, as a matter of fact, is when it was supposedly first opening of this stargate. And I have said, look, I have no idea. It's interesting information. We'll see what we can find out. I asked Jeff Harvey, who is a remote viewer, to see what he could find out. He has enlisted the assistance of some other remote viewers, and he is going to be with us tonight to tell us what they found. I don't know what they found yet. I'm going to find out when you do. We'll be back right after this. am pleased to have back with us tonight Jeff Harvey. Jeff has been with us on many occasions on this show in various roles. He is a multi-skilled, multi-talented, multifaceted individual. But we asked him to be with us as a remote viewer to take a look at the Gulf of Aden story. And he told us, that was a couple of weeks ago, and he told us that he would, invite some remote viewing friends, people that he's that he knows and that he's worked with in remote viewing, and he said he would get them together on this project and see if they would be willing to do it. And so he is back with us tonight with his report of what they found out. And, Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Good evening, Kevin. Good to be with you.
Jeff, so that new listeners will be up to speed on what we're talking about, let me just kind of give it in a nutshell. January the 5th, this information is on the internet. It's interesting, and it caught my eye, and I wanted to get into this and check it out. But the information that's on the internet is January the 5th, 2010, a Stargate opened up in the Gulf of Aden, or Aden. This is the Gulf. You hear about all the Somali pirates? Well, it takes place at a sort of a choke point in this Gulf of Aden. And the information is that a real anomaly happened, a Stargate underwater opened up, and there's all kinds of reports of this strange thing and that strange thing happening. A whole bunch of ships, warships, from a whole bunch of different countries, according to the reports, have showed up in the area. We took a look at it, and Jeff, you know, one of the things that I said when you were on with us talking about this is it seems a little odd to me that we have these satellite photographs of the Gulf and we don't see any ships in there. And yet we, even before this information came out, we knew that there were ships, warships from various nations there, because of the piracy issue. And I didn't see any ships in the satellite pictures, and I found that to be very, very interesting. It made me think the satellite pictures were doctored, because it should have been some ships. Anyway, having said that, you have taken this task on. And why don't you describe for us what you have done, and then we'll talk about what you found out, if anything.
Certainly.
So kind of describe for us the process you've been through here.
Sure. As soon as you begin to task a remote viewing session, the first thing you want to do is line up a team you can rely on that's got some experience, has gotten over most of their AOL life, which is basically when they allow intuition or imagination or any thinking into a session. Because remote viewing is strictly a right brain activity when you're actually accessing the data bursts. So any thinking that goes on or any imagination that creeps in actually taints the data in the session, and it makes it far, far less reliable. And it makes it much more difficult to actually do a review of it and an analysis. So I looked up Rick Hilliard, who operates the remote viewing unit, which is an interesting group of folks. Rick was trained by Major Ed Dames with me in class, as well as years before in other classes. Rick's got an extensive amount of training in remote viewing. And basically what they did was is they did some interesting work that, if you look at this, they basically took tasking to several other people that were in the remote viewing community and tasked them and sent out a cue. They formulated a cue, which is the question you're asking. And in this particular cue, we were isolating the Gulf of Aden. We were looking for anomalous activity, and we were looking for the cause of the anomalous activity. So we didn't just want to find out what's out there. We wanted to see what the cause of it was, which was very interesting. So Walter Bosley, as you know, Walter did the session, and Walter is a trained remote viewer. He was probably one of the most gifted I've seen in the early times. He had some very interesting data bursts he got that were very well connected. I liked them. And so we had Rick and myself, several other remote viewers, all did the session. What we found very, very surprising, though, was when we did some analysis on the sessions, we found that we had a tremendous amount of agreement on very main key portions of the anomalous activity, whereas we didn't have so much when we did the Greenland. So that obviously leaves me to think that, yeah, there's something up in Greenland, but it's not too interesting, obviously. So this one, on the other hand, happens to be extremely interesting in that we found things that agree on the sessions. There was only one session on a very junior remote viewer that didn't look quite the same, but you could still see the components in it that were agreeing. So it was quite interesting that even that fifth group came out very nice.
Okay, so all told, how many people were involved in this remote viewing?
I believe there is five in this group.
Okay. All right, now, for folks who don't know or they're not real familiar with remote viewing, you can't, we need to tell them that, yes, you can do it on your own. However, you can't rely on the accuracy of it if it's just one remote viewer, because what you have to do is have several remote viewings and then compare the notes and sort out what agrees, right?
That's correct. That's how it works.
Okay.
Because you have to remember that any remote viewer all by themselves might be, on a good day, about 80% so correct on all of the elements. Whereas if you have two remote viewers, anything that they have that agrees is considered 100% correct because you've got backup data. And then when you have three, four, and five remote viewers and they're all agreeing on major points, you have a lock.
Okay, so what you're telling us then is that on certain points of what you're going to share with us, you have a lock.
That is correct.
Okay. And I'm going to refer to this as your team, although we understand this is not a permanent standing team. These are friends and associates in remote viewing who assembled to help do this project. But for shorthand here on air, we'll say your team.
Sure, and we all do this for each other, so what happens is it doesn't matter where in the world you are, if you are part of a group, we can all be taskers for each other and operate our own sessions. So it works out quite well that way.
Okay. So did your team find that there is any anomalous activity in this Gulf of Aden region?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we knew, as a matter of public record, that there is geomagnetic anomaly there. That's been documented since the early 80s when the aircraft carrier Kennedy and our task force were down there. And you can see it in Nature magazine. They've got articles written up on it, and there's others out there.
Okay. But you found something different from this already documented magnetic anomaly?
Well, we don't know if it's different. That's the problem.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to get the root of during the show tonight. We're going to review all of the reports, what items we saw that were correlating, and individual components we'll take a look at. And then I think what might be nice is to allow your audience to participate, and after we've given our synopsis, allow them to give their opinions of what it could be based on the things that we're going to tell them.
Okay, I guess what I'm trying to get at with this question about anomalous activity versus the magnetic anomaly is, would you have seen this magnetic anomaly as anomalous activity, or would you see that there is something else going on? I mean, the magnetic anomaly had already been documented, but in taking a look at it, did it show up as anomalous? I guess that's the best way to put it.
Okay. Now let's take a look at your question just for a second, and let's think about time, temporal activity. Let's take just a case in point. Let's say this morning, up until very, very early this morning, say 5 a.m., everything in the Gulf of Aden was as it was for the past 10 years. And let's say that something changed, whether it be the thermal layer down below where the anomaly was, whether it be an earthquake or some other geo effect, or let's say it was something planetary where there was an alignment between some of the larger bodies in our solar system causing a greater pull on the Earth's crust, or could it be electromagnetic interference of some kind? Could it be some experimentation by the Navy down below? Let's just leave all of those things open, and let's say they occurred at 6 a.m.
Okay.
Now we have anomalous activity. 1 hour ago, there was no anomalous activity. Would you agree?
Yes.
And now, let's say that that activity affected the anomaly that was already there that we knew about and caused it to either open, widen, or begin exerting a field of some sort or sending something up through the surface of the water through to the surface.
Okay.
Now we've got something that, gee, that's pretty anomalous activity, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
And it could be the very same thing that was documented as anomaly 10 years ago, but now it's acting differently, so it's very anomalous, as opposed to yesterday. So
okay.
When you look at something in remote viewing, you cannot look at it and say, oh, well, that's this because. You can't do that only because there's a lot of things that could cause a change in something. So what you're attempting to do, first of all, is to find out, A, if there's anomalous activity, and we found gobs of it. B, you'd like to see if you could zoom in on that and have a look to see if you can have some identifying features of it. And that was the second step or second phase of our remote viewing session. So, in answer to your question, we're going to find that out together.
Okay. So, there's a whole lot of anomalous activity. Is there anything else about this first phase that we need to know?
Well, if you look at it, trying to determine whether there's anomalous activity, you look at what's called the site template of each person's session. And I'll just give you a quick brief synopsis of that. When we do a remote viewing session, you take pen and paper, you bring yourself down into theta wave state very quickly, and you don't need electroacoustics or anything else like HemiSync in order to do that. We're trained to do that from the very first couple of weeks we begin doing sessions in training. So you can get to theta state extremely quickly as compared to, say, the average person off the street. What we do then is we attempt to access, and we do access, if we've drawn a cue that's accurate enough, we can access the information that is attached to whatever that activity is. Because no matter where you are on the earth, no matter where, if you're doing something, it's being logged. Now, some people call it the matrix, some people call it the ether, they call it the Akashic record, but it doesn't really matter what you call it. It's a field of energy that documents everything that happens on the face of the earth, inside, under, above, everywhere. And if you design your cue properly, you can access that information in small packets or bursts of words and energy. And the first thing that happens is we draw a cue up, and then we assign a group of numbers to it so that everybody remote viewing that particular cue will get targeted to the same place so they can get the same data. How well they interpret it or they bring it in, that's up to the individual viewer. So the first thing that happens when you write those numbers down is your hand generates a very, very short response. We call an ideogram. Your finger will just jerk around a little bit. And it's similar to what some people call automatic writing. But all it is it's your nervous system that has coupled with your mind to reach out to that field and bring the information in like an antenna. And when it hits your subconscious processing, it comes up as archetypical symbols, and your body instantly generates a twitch response, which is the ideogram. And if you have your pen to paper at that point in time, you'll draw a little squiggly line or whatever it happens to be inside of about a quarter of a second or less. And that ideogram is your contact to the target. And that's actually, if it's actually taken apart at the very submicro level, it's actually a drawing of the sight. Now, there's a lot of data that goes behind that, but let's just put that aside and say that's what that is. So you'll go through the session and you'll bring down descriptors for various different things. We take a look at the sounds. We look at the dimensions of things that are there. We look at the tastes, the smells. We'll look at the colors, the feel, or the texture. And then after we put all of that information down, there will be a certain amount of charging that goes on within your nervous system. Your emotions well up within you for feelings about what you think or feel about that sight. And what that is called the aesthetic impact. It's the impact emotionally on you of the sight. Well, now if you're going into the rest of the section, you're going to need some way to divorce yourself from those emotions. So it's similar to discharging a capacitor. We basically short-circuit that by putting our emotional word, we assume all the emotions, and we take the one word that describes it best, and we put that down at the bottom of the paper, thereby discharging our emotional connection to the sight, so that we can go back to doing nothing but pulling in bursts, writing the words down, putting the descriptors on paper, drawing the pictures, and basically putting together several different pictures of the sight at different stages.
Okay, Jeff, we have to step out of here for a break. And we'll pick up right there when we come back. And we'll find out what's over there and what's down there in the Gulf of Aden. Maybe. We'll see. Welcome back. With me tonight, Jeff Harvey, and we're talking about the remote viewing that he and his team have done on this Gulf of Aden anomaly. Okay, so Jeff, you were describing for us that first phase. Are you still with me, Jeff? Well, isn't that interesting? See, this happens, folks. What can I tell you? You don't hear a dial tone, do you? You don't hear a dial tone because we're still connected. Somehow, his audio to us has been shut down. So we will attempt to reconnect with Jeff, and we'll see what happens. Sometimes we can, and sometimes we cannot. But I do appreciate whoever has shut his audio off, because, you see, by shutting his audio off, they have put a great big yellow highlighter pin over what he's talking about. We now know it's probably right on target, and we'll just see if we get him back on the telephone here. Sometimes it takes us a little while to do that. But we'll see if he's back with us here momentarily. Jeff, are you with us? Okay, he's back with us.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you now. It's Jeff, you know, this happened, I think, when you were on before. And what happens is we're still connected. We're not getting a dial tone or one of those beep, 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 beep signals. They just shut your audio off is all. So we're not hearing you. Yeah, well, yeah, but I do thank them for highlighting what's important.
Just stopped everything, shut off.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate them for highlighting what's important. So now we know that, this is probably right on target. Okay, so you were describing that first phase of remote viewing, and we are down to you get a little squiggle, and it's an ideogram, and I think then we kind of had to go to break.
And basically all that does is it sets up the session so we can go in and pick up further pieces of information. We log all the tastes, touches, feels, temperatures, dimensions, sounds, and emotions, and then we discharge those and draw them on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on to the next piece of data we're looking for and do the same thing all over again. And then at the very end of the session, we take each of those puzzles and those drawings and we connect them together into one site template or overall picture, which basically will give us an idea of what we're looking at. And the work is not done there, because once that's done, we typically will take a break from the session, and then we will allow ourselves to discharge somewhat, because it's a tremendous amount of mental exercise that goes on up there, and it's exhausting. I took the next whole day after the session I did to recuperate from it. So not everybody needs that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take a look at what happens next. Then after we're done with looking at those pictures of what we see as our template of what happened everywhere in the session, then we analyze it and try and come up with a summary of what the possibilities are based on what we see from the information of how we put together the template. And then we take each session and summary, the site template and the summary from each remote viewer, and we compare the items that are similar. And then that's how we come up with what we think we're dealing with.
Okay. So what did you come up with? What can you tell us about the things you have a lock on?
All right. Did you get a one of the emails I sent to you with the session site template and summary?
No.
Okay. I sent an email over with two pictures. One was of a site template and the other was of a summary. If you can find those and post them for the audience, they can look at it and they'll be able to see what we're talking about, but I'll describe it for them. If you take a look at the sessions we did, basically what came up as something the same, almost nearly identical in almost all the sessions, there's something down below, and it appears to be some kind of a container, encapsulation, or body. And it may or may not be living, but it certainly seems to be growing, and it seems to be emanating something. And something seems to be bubbling up through the water to the surface. In nearly every single session we did, they all have an agreement there. Even the most junior of the remote viewers we had, you could still see those same things in the session. And what was interesting about all of them was, is when you look at it, even some of the sessions have almost similar shapes drawn for what they saw. Now, some made it more boxy and rectangular, others more cylindrical, but it still has a cavity-shaped something holding something within. And many of them showed that it was porous, others that there was some sort of a composition inside, and they all showed some sort of emanation coming up through the water to the surface and above. And it was interesting, even what was interesting about the most junior remote viewer, who, when we looked at the session initially, we thought, well, there's not a whole lot of coordinating information in here, until we looked very, very carefully, and we could see that they were actually describing almost the same thing we were.
which we thought was kind of fascinating.
Okay, so...
you could take a look and easily see that.
So this object, whatever it is, are you seeing it as on the bottom of the Gulf? Or is it suspended in the water there somewhere?
Subterranean, we don't know that answer.
Okay.
Some sessions say that it fell there. Others show that it's underneath. So we're not positive of the actual depth of it, whether it be on the bottom or beneath the surface. But we know it's down very low and extremely deep.
Is it large or is it fairly small?
No, it appears to be fairly large.
And sort of cylindrical in shape.
The size and shapes, yeah, the sizes typically are in the ballpark of a sea chest. You know what a sea chest looks like, or a cedar chest that someone would store their valuables at home in.
Mm-hmm.
Something of that size or larger.
Okay, so we're not talking about something that would be the size...
We're
not talking about something that would be the size, then, of, say, a ship.
No, we don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't rule that out either, because we did not go for... We didn't go for size specifically. We were looking to identify the anomaly and then the cause of the anomaly. Those were the cues that we were looking for.
So okay.
We found an anomaly, obviously. We all agreed. We found what appears to be the source of the anomaly, and it appears to be whatever it is that's down in that container, whatever it is. Now, let's take a supposition that it is much larger than that one or two sessions show. Let's say it's much, much larger. Well, if that's the case, it is entirely possible it could be a down sub. I was talking with Walter Bosley about that, and that's one of his thoughts on what it might be. And that's definitely a possibility on that. But again, that's an extremely large item, and I mean extremely large. So although it's possible, the other sessions don't point to it being quite that large.
Okay, so the other sessions point to something the size of a sea chest.
Say that again?
The other sessions point to this being something the size of a sea chest.
There's one session that shows it the size of a sea chest. The other, the size of a beaker. In my session, I did not have any size, but the feel of the size was as large or larger than a sea chest.
Mm-hmm. What could account for the difference? That's a fairly vast difference, is it not? What could account for the differences in the sizes?
It is.
Okay. Let me just check. Do you have me on a speakerphone?
Size?
Okay. Do you have me on a speakerphone? Because when I speak, you can't hear me.
To a regular line instead. I would get on the... I have a regular landline I can use instead of the cordless.
Oh, yeah. Cordless is always, 100% of the time, cordless is talk show hell. So, yeah, go ahead and get on the real telephone. Cordless is a, always, you know, even if you pay $1,000 for a cordless phone, folks, it's a radio. And it gets interfered with by all the electronics in your house.
You want to wait till break?
Well, I don't know. Can you hear me when I talk?
Well, I can hear you when you talk.
Yeah, okay. Well, the question I ask is, what could account for the difference in the in people's impressions of the size of this thing?
If you take a look at the way a remote viewer remote views, typically we're going to look at the object usually from the top or the side. And part of a cue in one of the sessions is that something should be perceivable from the top. Now, the top of something isn't always the same size as the bottom, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're looking at an urn from the top, it's going to look different than if you look at it from the side.
Okay.
So when someone remote views something, some people have a tendency in their neurology to pull the data packets down in different size bursts. So one person may be predisposed to always being very good at describing the size and the shape of an object, whereas others might be much better with the smells in the area, the temperature, the textures of things, or what sounds they hear at the site. So it depends on the individual remote viewer what they're best at, and that's where they'll get the most bursts of data. Now, you would say, well, shouldn't everyone be the same? Well, everyone's neurology is not the same, so no, that's not the case.
Okay, were you able to sort of pinpoint the location in the Gulf? I mean, where is it in the Gulf?
That would take extra session work. Remember, the two cues were, was there anomalous activity, and what is the cause of the anomalous activity?
Mm-hmm.
You do a session like this, and you make it a project, you do 10 or 15 different sessions to identify all of those other things we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what is the size of that thing down below? What is it composed out of? What colors are we really dealing with? What kind of components are on it? Are there any extra shapes or structures? And each one of those you mark as an element that you see in your original diagram, and you do an entire extra 45 to hour and a half long session to just look at one element.
Mm-hmm.
We were only able to look at two things. Is there an anomaly? And what is the cause of the anomaly?
All right, we have to step away for a break, and if you'll switch telephones, we'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. We're talking with Jeff Harvey about the remote viewing session he and his team did related to the Gulf of Aden. So, Jeff, what does this bring us to? What conclusions? I know you can't make final determination on a lot of stuff, but what are some of the conclusions in summary that we can draw from this session?
All right, when you're looking at the things that we've seen, and I pulled up just to take a quick look at what appears to be X or our target on each of these, and all of them appear to be something slightly large, and again, not extremely large, but they all show something emanating upwards. And obviously, if you take a look at some of the other descriptors that are in there, there's another component that several of the sessions had that was very interesting. You could see that there seemed to be something that resembled, and I'm going to describe this as quote-unquote a pipe, even though that may not be at all what it is. It's entirely possible that maybe a long tubular submarine, who knows. But the point is a couple of sessions show that, where it's got an outer hull, an inner hull, but they also show that there's something going on inside. And several of these also show that there are life forms or something is alive or energetic. So we have some pretty interesting possibilities that could be it, but it would take a lot of further work to actually narrow those down and get somewhat definite about it.
Okay,
you take a look at some of these. Go ahead.
Whenever you say some of them show there's some sort of life forms or something energetic, is that inside this structure or outside of it?
Well, some are showing it inside and some are showing it outside. And that's what's interesting about this, because if you look at some of the different sessions, there's some very interesting AOLs, such as animal, cat-like, things like that. And those are just interpretations that come that are analytical overlay or what may be errors creeping into the session, which is why we actually list those as errors in the session. And unless they show up 18 gazillion times, we just ignore them as being perhaps your mind locked onto the idea of something and it allowed that to creep in imagination. But if you look, there are bubbles coming to the surface on more than one of these.
Bubbles.
And there's a shape to it, and there's also a matter and a thought component to it, which is extremely exciting.
Well, would it be out of the question? I'm just exploring possibilities. I'm not saying this is what it is. Is it within the parameters that this thing might be a, you know, we hear about some of the UFOs that we talk about. We hear about some of them being actually alive. Could this be a UFO that is for some reason submerged and is alive? Would that be out of these parameters?
Well, it could actually be that. It could be that or any other kind of bio-life form. Because if you take the human body, let's take the human body for a second, let's put it down there at, let's say, 15,000 feet, and let's assume for a moment that it's not going to immediately burst into a million pieces. Let's say that it can survive at that depth. And you were something who had never seen that kind of an entity before. And you were looking at it through remote viewing or some sort of a viewing device that simply showed the types of containers you're looking at. You would say, well, that's a container. And it's got a somewhat smooth yet rubbery texture on the outside. And there appears to be a liner inside and several of them, and some mechanisms that cause a pumping action. This might be a piece of machinery. And there's a couple of things in there that are actually emanating electromagnetic spectrum. This might be a transmitter. So you would look at that and you would say, well, this could be a lot of different things. But if you looked at the human body, it would look just that alien to someone who had not seen that kind of a form before.
Okay. So this may be a bio-life form, but it could also be a piece of machinery of some kind. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's possible. We're not seeing anything that looks machine-like in the drawings, or not overwhelmingly so. What we're seeing is something of a container nature, seems to be lined, and there seems to be growing or some sort of an energetic change within and without. So if you look at those terms, there's quite a bit of room for interpretation there.
Uh-huh.
By the way, your posit isn't that far out. We're already building nanoparticle engines out of cellular molecules. They've already built many of them, and they're documented in many of the peer-reviewed journals.
Okay, so Let's go back to the information that was on the net that we talked about in the first show that we did, and that is that it's a stargate. Would this, what you found in the remote viewing sessions, would a stargate fit within those parameters?
Well, let's take for a moment the movie Stargate and that particular mechanical electrical device.
Yeah.
Or a quantum energy device, depending on how you want to look at it. That would obviously match, if you're remote viewing it, because of a couple of things. Now, obviously, size and shape, we haven't totally determined what the end result is because we didn't go down and really look at shape in extreme particular detail, or we would have gotten a lot closer. But let's say that it is a stargate, just for a moment. You're looking at something that has a roughly roundish surface to it, and it seems to have a lining inside of it, and it seems to have emanations, and it does seem to grow, or it is growing.
that all could be determined to be something like a Stargate if you're looking at it through the eyes of remote viewing.
So the story about this being a Stargate is not, from a remote viewing standpoint, is not something that's outlandish and impossible, but could fit what you guys saw.
It's one of the possibilities that if we go further in, we could either rule out or confirm.
Mm-hmm.
That would take quite a few more sessions to go into the different elements to be able to determine what they are and see how much more correlation we get.
Well, based on the data you have...
I made up my mind because I haven't seen enough data.
Okay, based on the data you have, is it possible... And I don't know, I'm just asking, is it possible, based on this data, to say, well, it's about a 40% chance it could be that, or 30%. Maybe remote viewing doesn't work that way. I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I can't give you that kind of an answer. If I were to give you an answer like that, I would say it's certainly not like the traditional one we're looking at. We do have one of the sessions that drew a shape that's quite similar to a Stargate, but that's only one session that drew it that way. My session has something, and my drawing skills are not like this individual. This individual is extremely good. His looks a little bit like, how will I phrase this? Almost like you have, if you were to look at the way an axe looks, a double-bitted axe, only instead of the axe head, you had a cylindrical something there at the end. That's what they have. So let's take a look at a couple of possibilities. If you recall, we had mentioned ancient technologies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's say they are out hunting for and have found an ancient piece of technology from back in either the Atlantean or the Lemurian days. All right, and we know from all the hieroglyphs and all of the writings that were passed down, inscribed into stone, that they had energetic devices. And some of them were pretty interesting looking. And if you look at some of Sitchin's work or some of the others, you'll see quite a bit of that.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. Don't go away, folks. It only gets more and more interesting. You know, we're just going deeper and deeper. We'll be back right after this.
Stern would want to be if he were legit.
And as a matter of fact, I look a lot like Howard Stern, don't you think? The hair? We're talking with Jeff Harvey, and we're talking about this remote viewing session that he and his team have done. And let me express again my thanks to them for doing this. And they've taken a quick look at the Gulf of Aden, and they say, yes, there is an anomalous activity there. And we're talking about this object. I'm calling it an object. I don't know if that's what they would call it. But in my vernacular, this object that they saw. And, Jeff, you were saying that it could be ancient technology, and we had to go away for break before you got to finish your thoughts on that. So I want you to be able to finish your thoughts on that.
All right. If you think about much of the ancient technology that they've searched for over the last few decades around the Earth, as we detailed in the last show, it's entirely possible that's something that we're dealing with here. I was looking over the sessions together again because I didn't have as much time to put into them as I would have liked, and it was very interesting that several of them, again, had, at the item at the bottom, living organisms, growing, porous, fielded, cracked. There's a lot of different ways you can interpret that. Now,
if you look at this, and I'm looking at the a couple of the different things I saw, in my session there is a filtering element, and in the youngest remote viewer there is an element of filtering as well with a grid system that was there, and the bubbles coming up from that. So there's many of these features that are similar. Then I go over to remote viewer 3, and I look at the final page 9, and again, it shows something basically hollow and circular or oval that has fallen off of a higher level down through the ocean or through the water to the bottom. And there's something at the bottom, and that's pretty clear that they're all showing the same thing. Something is down at the bottom, something is emanating up, and whether what is at the bottom is alive or not is up for debate. As I look at one of the sessions here, it looks like a box-like structure. Another looks like a sea chest structure. So again, rectangular or box-like. And then I look at another one, and the entire area of there is in a long box-like rectangle with a central rise point in the middle. So again, all suggesting something is at the bottom, something is rising up. So if I were to hang my hat on one thing, I'd say we do have something at the bottom and something is coming up from it. What is coming up, that remains to be seen yet. There would have to be a lot more work done on it to be able to identify what it is. It'd be kind of interesting to see what your audience thinks it might be.
And we'll do that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to open up the telephone lines. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Now, that telephone number will work from anywhere on the planet. You can call me from any place on the planet at 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, we do have a toll-free number. If you're not on a calling plan where you can call our main number without it costing you anything, then you can use our toll-free number. 888-223-4599. And for those of you who are watching us on TV, you can on our TV channel, you can see the numbers right there on the screen. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada and you don't want to make the international long-distance call, then you can use our flash message option by going to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see the link. Just scroll down. You'll see the link that says flash message. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello.
Rusty, how are
James,
you?
James, very good. James, I tried to look up a website for you on and specifically related to the remote viewing. Is there? Do you have one?
Yeah, it's Jeff.
Jeff, I'm sorry. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Rusty, I do not maintain a site for remote viewing. Rick Hilliard and Sandra Hilliard operate one in Australia, and it's called the Remote Viewing Unit. And they do a really bang-up job in training, as well as Ed Dames. He's another trainer. He trained both of us. But Rick has been doing hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of sessions, and he has trained people all over Australia and in the United States as well. He's definitely someone who could get the job done, and he's got a five-day course, I think, that's starting on April 26th, around 12. And his site is Remote Viewing Unit. .org, all one word.
All right, I looked at it.
If you want to take a look at
thanks.
Some of that.
Okay.
You mentioned a couple things about that. You had like a team. Are you all in the same location, or are you?
No,
can you
we're
be
all
at different locations?
World.
You're all in different locations?
No, we're all over the world, and we do that on purpose.
Okay. And one last quick thing. Did you get a sense that there was danger associated with your remote viewing that you was doing of this golf?
Okay, did I get a sense that what was associated with it?
Was it is it dangerous what is happening?
Okay, all right, is there any danger involved? We don't see it overtly, although some of the emotional impact from others that near the site, I did see alerted, edgy, jumpy, disquieted. There wasn't anything that was truly horrific. There was one comment of mortified in there, but that wouldn't be something that I would initially attribute to danger.
All righty. Well, thank you so much and answer my questions, and good show, guys. Thanks.
All right, Rusty. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Rusty.
623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. And folks, what we've done here is Jeff has laid before us the information that he's got from the remote viewing sessions that he and his team did. And he's suggested that it could be this, it could be that. What do you think, based on what you heard, what do you think? And by the way, that was a good question Rusty asked. Did anybody sense danger around this thing? But what do you think, based on what you've heard? We understand it's going to be speculation, but what do you think this might could be? And one of the things, though, now, Jeff, that I thought about, you were saying, well, it could be a Stargate. There was one drawing that kind of had that sort of image to it. But if it is, it's not the big, massive thing that we see in the TV show.
Well, it is possible for that to be large. Two of the drawings came up to be what could be that large.
Oh, okay.
Two of the drawings showed it in a square or rectangular shape. And one of those, well, actually two of those that were in the square rectangular shape were from very advanced remote viewers.
Well, see, that's interesting because the Sumerian carvings that show the gate of the gods, where the gods are coming from somewhere down some steps and then through a gate into our world, that's a rectangular shape.
And that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
That's why when we were talking about the Stargate, I wanted to caution everyone, don't get too hung up on the shape until you've done the sessions, because the shape could change, and that could put a whole different light on what you're actually dealing with. But when you see emanations coming out of it, you pretty much know something energetic is happening.
All right, let's go to the telephone.
Logically.
Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. It's Doug. Jeff, can you just finish what you were just about to say there?
Okay, I'm just saying don't get hung up on what it could be, because anything that's energetic, it could be a lot of different things. So keep your mind open when you guess.
Right. Jeff, my name's Doug. I run the Alien Agenda website here, a friend of Kevin's here, and I love his show, and I try to support him in every way I can. And I find that he has some of the most amazing guests on his show. With remote viewing, Major Ed Dames, of course, has brought this into the forefront here in a major, major way. However, I think that most people are still not really clear on how this all works. Can you perhaps give us some more insight on how all this works here? And I'm going to take the question off the air, give the line open for somebody else to call in. And thank you once again for being on the show.
Sure, Doug. Yeah, it actually is very easy if you look at it from this perspective. Your nervous system that goes through your entire body is not just there to tell your body that it feels warm or hot. It's actually used by your mind as an antenna, and your mind is actually outside of your body. It uses as an antenna to capture data from that field of information we discussed earlier that seems to be mapped throughout time. And the latest research on time says there's no such thing. If it hasn't happened yet, it's still the same as the present, and the past is still the same as the present. So if your autonomic nervous system is the antenna, and you're bringing it in using your mind to capture the data, and then it bubbles up through your preconscious processing as archetypical symbols, which is what we jot down on the paper, and then those symbols are connected by your mind into a picture of four dimensions. Most people think three, it's actually four. And your long-term memory looks and says, hey, do I see anything that looks like that? And if it does, it bubbles it up through your brain as an idea or a thought. And they are two very, very different things. A thought comes from the left brain, and an idea comes from the right brain. So if it doesn't recognize it, what it will do is it'll take the next closest thing it sees, and it will bubble that up through the conscious processing as a thought or an idea, and that's what you're writing down on the paper, and that's how remote viewing works.
Okay, I have a question about that, but I want to take this telephone call first. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Karen from Colorado.
Okay, tell me your first name again.
Karen.
Karen. Okay, Karen, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thank you. A couple of questions. One about the remote viewing. I'm not sure if I just missed this little segment of when you, Jeff, were explaining this, but how do you know that you're dealing with a specific point in time? Like, for example, when you were viewing, were you looking for information and targeting information from that hour or day? And then the second question is there anything online that shows any kind of imaging of this anomaly?
All right, let's take the second question first because that's the fastest. I don't see anything online that I would trust to say that that's the anomaly. When you're using Google Earth, you have to remember those are static shots that it took at a point in time, and they upload them. It's not real-time data you're getting, despite how well they animate it sometimes. Now, your other question was on the remote viewing, if you could give me that once again.
Okay. In terms of, and you had talked about, you know, there obviously there's any point in time when this thing could have perhaps arrived.
Okay.
And then
I
not
understand.
Been there in the past and here now. When you view that, do you focus in on a particular time, like in the minute, or do you have to request a certain time so you're not seeing the past or the future or something other than right now?
Sure. When you're doing remote viewing, we have things we call temporal qualifiers, which lock in a range of time or a specific point in time. If you're doing, say, the present, you're looking at a very short period of time. Let's say you're looking at near-term trajectories. Near-term might be the next week or two. Mid or long-term will be several years. You can look back in the past, or you can launch a session that looks at exactly the moment in time you put your paper and pencil together. Now, here's what's really neat. Let's say we assign a couple of numbers to a session, and I launch that thing right now, okay? And I launch that cue, and I lock in the cue to those numbers. Now I can give those numbers to any other remote viewer, and they will remote view that the same way. So we can actually target specific points in time or ranges of time. If you were doing a cue for, say, let's say you were a neurologist looking to see what he was going to do for his next range of his career, we might do something like Dr. Latvia, and we would look at his near-term or his long-term optimum trajectory for a career. And we would take a look at that very simply and see what the best path or trajectory for that particular individual would be for their career. Maybe they would be working more in the brain sciences arena, or maybe they would be working a lot more with, oh, say, the endocrinology and how that interfaces with neurology. So we can look at time.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Karen, I have a question. Are you a first-time caller?
I am.
We got to give you some applause. All right, now look, don't let this be your last time.
I won't.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm calling from Minnesota, and my name is Jason.
Okay, Jason, reach around there and turn your volume down because we're hearing the show in delay.
All right, here. Is that better?
That's better. Jason, you're from Minnesota, and what's on your mind?
Well, what I'm curious is anybody living near the Gulf of Aden, and these, what I've been hearing on the Internet, people talking about the ships that are out there, is there anybody that would be even listening or anybody that on the Internet that's been talking about this, anybody living out in that area, or know somebody that would be living out that area that had seen any ships or anything of sort like that?
Ground truth. That's an interesting question, because what we could really use, when we do a remote viewing, we look for something called immediate feedback. We're looking for an answer to how well did we do with our cue. And in most remote viewing sessions, we'll actually go and take a look at a site and see, okay, yeah, we got it right. Oh, and look there, that was this piece on the chart. And so if you can get actual ground truth that's reliable, you get better feedback, and that gives you a better way of determining what you're going to do next on your next probe into that site. Good question.
Of course.
Okay. Jason, are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
Well, we got to give you some applause for that. Don't let this be your last. And thanks much for the call. All right. We have a flash message. This is from Peter in Columbia, and he says, have you ever remote viewed an alien abduction? And if so, what did you learn?
That's a good question. I have not. But that would be a great question to posit to Rick and Sandra at the remote viewing unit. If you go up to their site, I believe it was remoteviewingunit.com. If you'll go there, or .org, excuse me, it's remoteviewingunit.org, O-R-G, and you send them an email, they'll probably send you quite a bit of information regarding that, because they have dealt with issues of that nature. Currently, they're working on criminal work, but Rick could tell you more about that than I.
Okay, we're going back to the telephone. Caller, hang on just 1 second. We have a flash message from Australia from the remote viewing unit, and it says the remote viewing unit team is listening to you from Australia. Interesting subject, great show. Regards, Rick and Sandra. So, Rick and Sandra?
Awesome.
Thank you. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin from Beaverton.
Okay, Kevin.
I was wondering if people who are remote viewing an area, if people that are currently in that area can sense those people there viewing.
Extremely sensitive individuals can.
Okay.
And is there any way, let's say I am an extremely sensitive individual and I sense that you, Jeff, are remote viewing around me, is there any way I can block you?
Yes. How's that for a quick question?
That's okay. And is that part of your training? Is that part of the training that you get?
Not part of everyone's.
Uh-huh.
I have worked on that since I was a boy, actually. But I knew some things that I wasn't supposed to know at that ripe young age, and that's the reason why I began doing that. And that may be one of the reasons why I got into the intel game for a while. There's a tremendous amount of things you can do in programming in your own mind for defense, for offense. You can do deep state mind probes on other people, remote influencing. You can do conscious projection right out into objects and other living organisms. So
There's a lot you can do with your brain, but the question is, do you have time to go play with it? And it would be nice if we all had enough time to play with those things.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Ryan in Washington.
Hi, Ryan.
The question is, was there an earthquake or not? Couldn't this just simply be a volcano mound forming at the bottom of the ocean?
Good question.
I heard a lot of disinformation if there was an earthquake or not. Some say there is, some say there wasn't.
Okay, let's let him answer.
Now, there's definitely a possibility that seismic activity has caused a change in that area. And that is one of the possibilities. And if you take a look at the pictures that were drawn in the site templates that show something square or rectangle, even though in nature we never see right angles, so to speak, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's not something down there of that shape and seismic activity was directly below it.
The only thing is, you see, no seismic reporting agency has reported either an earthquake or volcanic activity in that area. And there are reports on the internet that there was an earthquake, I believe it said 6.2, and that this was not reported in the news. Well, no seismic reporting agency reported an earthquake or a volcano, so I don't know. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. We are back, and the telephone lines are open, 623-444-5889, toll-free, 888-223-4599. And, of course, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. If you're inside the USA or you're inside of Canada and you send a flash message, I won't see it. Our filters will filter it out. So, and why? Well, we have phone numbers for you, and I'll even pay for the call. If you need me to pay for the call, not a problem. Use a toll-free number. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Stefan from Quebec City.
Hi, Stefan.
Hello. Mr. Harvey, I was wondering if the fact that so many ships are there, if they provide some sort of proof that the world has not conjured this phenomenon on itself, that it is happening to us instead.
All right, let's look at that question a little closer. Are you saying that it could be something of a mass consciousness effect?
More along the lines of something outside of our consciousness that's happening to us rather than us doing it to ourselves. That we did not conjure.
Okay, so a remote influence of mass consciousness.
Yeah, just because of all the ships that are swarming there, like, you know, almost like a defense.
In other words, it ain't us.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're thinking that perhaps whatever is down there is reacting to all the activity we're putting out there.
Yeah, but not necessarily negatively. It might be something benign, and that we're just overreacting to it, maybe.
Well, that would never happen, would it, with us? Yeah, we have a tendency on a whole to overreact, so I have to agree with you. Someone was asking me about that, you know, wouldn't you feel threatened? And I would say, no, I always put my hand out first, and then if you bite my fingertips, then I'm going to do something about it. But my first obligation is to put my hand out. And if we do a little bit more of that these days, instead of allowing ourselves to be controlled by others, we might have a little more peaceful planet than we do currently.
I agree. Thank you. Great guest and great show, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have a flash message from Rob in Australia, and two questions. The first one is, after a remote viewing session, does it make you more sensitive? Are you more of a sensitive after each session?
Yes, and the reason for that is because when you go down into theta state, that's actually in my healing practice. Basically, when you get somebody down into theta state, their body heals extremely well. It's extremely sensitive to vibratory responses, and your nervous system is extremely tuned and sensitive. So for some time afterwards, you're very sensitive. The other side of that for me is I get wiped slick because it takes such a tremendous amount of energy to focus at that level, because we have to tune out any imagination and any thought about something. We simply have to key in to the nervous system and try and take any sensory input we can get in whatever data bursts we get. So you're
well, that, that's true. Okay, that brings up the second question, and caller, just hang on. We'll get to you here in just a second. How important is audio in remote viewing? Would it be possible to send an audio message via remote viewing?
All right, let's talk about remote influencing, which is what you're discussing. Telepathy and remote influencing have similar traits. Ingo Swann, in his book Starfire, which was a work of fiction, went over something that when I read it seemed an awful lot more like reality than it was fiction, so I tested it. And it was basically consciousness projection. And he was not lying. It works exactly the way his hero in the story talks about it. And Ingo was documented by the military that he was able to, with his mind, reach into a piece of electronics and wipe out a circuit or affect it dramatically. So yes, you can send a message using your mind, and telepathy is how that really works. I'm doing some research right now with another researcher, Todd Murphy, and he built a system called the Shiva system, which takes gentle currents stimulating from coils around the skull, and it allows you to do a lot of those interesting things, and I'm working on that currently to develop that further. I've been able to do certain things, and I've tested it with an ex-military fellow friend of mine named Jason. And he and I tested it, and it does work. But we have a lot more work to do on it before you can get it to be reliable.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, the caller is either gone or not ready to speak. 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. I have a question, but let's take this call first. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Murphy.
Okay, the caller is not ready to speak. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Jeff, you said something?
Yeah, I could barely hear him in there. It was almost a whisper, not even quite that.
I didn't hear it. What I heard was me in the background on delay. And when you call, don't be listening to your radio to hear me say you're on the air, because that won't happen until after I've already hung up. There's a delay, okay? So listen to your telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Well, my name is John Lane from the great state of Arizona, Mesa, Arizona, to be exact.
Okay, John.
I heard part of the question about sabotage earlier, and I was wondering, in this wonderful world that we live in with counter-espionage and espionage and all of that, would it be possible for a team to target his team with false information, false readings, or just confusion, since they knew that you were on the air and you were searching for this specific information, has he run into that before?
So I understand. You're saying, can say a counter espionage remote viewing team, or a counterintelligence remote viewing team, target Jeff and his group to make them see something that's not actually factual?
Correct.
Okay. Is that possible, Jeff?
Remote interference is possible. Whether or not they could make you see something that's not there or not, this I don't know. I have not experienced it, or at least not to my knowledge, obviously. But yes, it is possible. There are ways of using remote influencing as a blocker, and there are a lot of things you can do. And the more people you have assigned to that task that are able to join their energy, the more effective you will be. It seems to me, though, you'd need something extremely valuable to take that much time to keep that blocked. That would be something you might save for, say, a war room or something of that nature.
Well, would it be a case of numbers? Say they had 100-to-1 remote viewers, to your team. Would that change the effectiveness of their team?
Absolutely. Yeah, the more people that are involved on the team, the more energy that is generated psychically, or shall I say mentally, because there are differences.
Okay, so,
go ahead, John.
If I understand correctly, then you're, if the goal for the Aiden, or Aiden, whatever it is that important, they might have a large team specifically targeting that, but if it isn't that important, then they might not be.
I don't think it's that important that they would, and for the team being situated the way we are with the diversity of talent, it doesn't make sense that we'd have so many cues that are the same. Because when you're blocking, there's a lot of different strategies you could do, and I just don't see the earmarks of that on this.
John, let me ask you a question. Are you a first-time caller?
I am, sir.
Well, John, you got to get some applause for that. Don't make it your last time. Good to hear from you.
All right, thank you.
All right. Well, we instead of playing applause, I played the bumper music, but we got the applause in there finally. Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of like flying a 747 with no hydraulics here. Okay. Now, see, his question made me think of something. Let's say they were running some interference, remote viewing interference. Is it possible then that the thing with the shape would be that one person is seeing a part of it, another person sees another part, nobody's seeing the whole because of the interference? Is that possible?
It's possible, but let me tell you what I would do if it was me. If I were doing something like that, let's say I was trying to remote influence someone.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'd probably have 10 people for every one person I was trying to target. And since they did not know how many people were on our team, because we didn't even release it, and I didn't even know how many were involved until today, probably a half hour prior to the show, I just don't see that as being an issue. And if I were going to do it, I would basically make it so that everyone saw the same thing, and I would make sure that the shape or whatever it was I was trying to make sure they didn't get was exactly the same with every viewer, so that they said, wow, it must be it, because we've hit it right on the head and we all have the same thing.
Ah, yeah, that would be the way to mislead.
That's what I would do.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
This is Gary.
Hi, Gary.
My old amigo. I have nothing to tell you where I'm from because I doubt this remote viewing thing.
Okay.
And I would like to speak to Jeff because I do doubt this whole thing.
Okay. Well,
hello,
there you are. Go for it. But you have to hurry now because...
Go ahead, Gary. Give me your question.
I doubt the whole remote viewing stuff. I doubt you and I doubt Ed Danes. I will give you my first name and I will tell you I'm from Western New York State. And if anybody comes and knocks at my door...
Okay, you're going to have to hang on, Gary. You ran out of time. The break's taking over. Just stay on hold. I'll let you have your shot at this when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. We are on Final Approach. We have on the line with us Gary from New York. And Gary, we want to give you the opportunity to finish what you wanted to say or ask.
Yes. Jeff, I respect you and I am not questioning. I'm just saying I doubt the abilities of you and Ed Danes. I gave you a clue, come and knock on my door and find me.
Well, let me ask you something, Gary. Have you ever watched any of the documentaries about the program of remote viewing as it was born and developed by the intelligence agencies here in the United States?
No. I have not.
Well, that's where it came from. Remote viewing was used by the it was used by the Soviet Union. I assume still being used by the Russians. They had it before we did, and it was developed. It's been with the CIA. It's been with the NSA. It's been with various different intelligence groups that oversaw it. But that's where it came from. Getting specific information, doing psychic spying, if you will, and getting specific information out of the Soviet Union when we couldn't get it with human intelligence.
I would like to see proof. I will come back on the Kevin Smith Show and exalt you and Ed Danes.
Let me ask this. If he does this, are you willing to pay all the expenses for him to come and knock on your door?
I don't have to pay his expenses.
Oh, yes. There's expenses for him to travel to you to prove it to you.
Website that sells.
No, look. You're asking him to...
You do, sir.
You're asking him to make a trip, and there are expenses involved in making that trip. If he does it, are you willing to pay those expenses?
That's all I ask.
But are you willing to pay the expenses?
No.
You can't ask the man to come just give you personal proof when it's going to be out of his pocket.
I am not in a personal mood. You are on this worldwide show making claims. Come and find me.
Well, you're asking for personal proof. If he's willing to do that, it takes money out of his pocket to come give you your personal satisfaction. You have to pay for that. It's like when you go in the cafeteria, you personally select food that satisfies you. You have to pay for that food.
Find me.
Well, thanks for the call. It's an unreasonable request. I'm certainly not opposed to challenges, and I'm not opposed to saying, well, okay, prove it. But if it's going to involve money, that's going to come out of the person's pocket just to satisfy you, you got to pay for that. That's only fair. Okay, I think we've got time for one more call. If you call right now, 623-444-5889 and 888-223-4599. If you ask me to prove that, well, I don't know what that was. I don't know. Are you still with us, Jeff? Okay, Jeff got dropped off the line. Look, if you ask me to come prove to you that I'm 6 feet tall, I'm willing to walk out to the airport. I'm willing to get on an airplane and come to you and let you measure to see if I'm 6 feet tall, if you're willing to pay for me to do that. Okay? I got no problem with proving things like that, and I don't think Jeff would. But you have to pay the expenses involved in getting your personal satisfaction, your personal proof. That's only a reasonable. It's too late in the show for us to reestablish contact with Jeff, so let me thank him for being with us. And let me say this. Whatever it is that's happening in the Gulf of Aden is still quite mysterious. Is it a downed sub? Could be, according to the remote viewing team. Is it ancient technology? Well, could be, according to the remote viewing team. Is it a Stargate? Might be, could be, according to the remote viewing team that we had here tonight. The point is, we still don't know what it is, other than it's not just a natural fracture in the landscape. It is some kind of object. Jeff has called us back, and let me push the right button. Jeff, yes.
There we are.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe I'm unfair, but I don't think so. I think what I said is true. If you want personal proof, you got to pay the expenses involved in that.
Or you can simply just go to your local government office and ask them for a Freedom of Information request and ask for Stargate and Grill Flame operations, and they'll send you all of the data that there is that the government has on the two operations that we're remote viewing.
Oh, there you go. And then you can read that, this isn't something that was made up out in the public. This is something that was developed as part of our intelligence program here in the United States. Jeff, I was saying, we don't know still what this is, other than we can say it's not just a crack in the surface of the earth. There's some kind of object there.
Correct.
Okay. And there's some kind of energy involved.
Correct.
Now, we had the question about could it just be a volcano that's forming, and that's what the remote viewers are seeing, and they see the energy coming up out of it. Good question. However, none of that has been reported by any of the seismic reporting agencies around the world, and it would be.
Yeah, with regards to that one, if you had a 6.2, the press in Yemen would literally be rolling off the shelves about that earthquake, because it would literally have rocked their foundations in Yemen. So that one is not the case.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being with us. I want to thank the remote viewing unit in Australia for their assistance with this. Thank you very much. I want to thank Walter Bosley for being a part of this, and anybody else that was involved. And Jeff, I want to thank you for putting this together for us to give us a little bit more insight into what's going on there. I have to say it raises more questions than I already had, but it's very intriguing.
I appreciate your taking a little time to review it. It was certainly an interesting topic to go over, and it's always good to speak with you because you asked the right questions.
Well, I hope so. And I am quite certain there are questions I should have asked that I just didn't think of, and over the days ahead, maybe if they come to my old brain, then I'll email them to you, and we can go from there. But I know that each of the remote viewers had to take time out of their very busy schedules to do this. It's not something they can just do in 10 or 15 minutes. And I appreciate the fact that they have donated that time to the cause, and I'm just very appreciative of it.
If you spent a lot of time, and she did a great job.
I'm sorry?
Rick.
Who?
I said Sandra did a great job at putting together and coalescing all that data. She spent a lot of hours on it, so I appreciate that as well.
All right. Our hats off to them as well. Stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. We're out of time. And what we have to do is say adios until tomorrow. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.